Welcome to the Authentic Health Coaching Show. My name is Tom Corson Knowles, founder of Authentic Health Coaching. Hey, if you haven't checked us out at AuthenticHealthCoach.com, please do. We have an amazing free report for you with Dr. Corson's top 5 nutrition tips. It is the number one guide to taking your health to the next level. And today in the show, we have an amazing guest for you, Andrew Johnston. And Andrew has been a personal trainer for many years. He's been a professional cyclist and competed in many triathlon championships, as well as with the U.S. World Triathlon Team. And he has been voted by the Men's Journal as the best personal trainer in 2005 and in 2006. And he's been in the Hawaii Ironman World Championships, and he's been featured in this amazing documentary, Living is Winning, about his inspirational life and his story. And Andrew shares his story today on the show about how he had leukemia and how he overcame that and still continued after his bout with cancer that he overcame to still continue to do triathlons and compete in Ironman competitions. And he's just an incredible, incredible, inspiring person. And you're going to learn so much from him today. I mean, this information is worth more than the weight of gold. I mean, it absolutely is worth so much. If you take this information and apply it to your life, your life will never be the same. You will never be the same person after listening to the story if you apply what Andrew teaches you. Because, I mean, he's the guy who teaches top professional athletes all over the world and how to take their body and their health to the next level, and he can teach you the same thing, and he does in this episode. So enjoy it, and if you haven't subscribed yet to the show, please do. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, The Authentic Health Coaching Show, and make it a wonderful day.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for being with us today on The Authentic Health Coaching Show. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about you and, you know, what got you interested in nutrition and fitness in the first place?
My pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having me. I have actually been a professional cyclist in my early career, and after about 3 concussions, my wife and my doctors all agreed that I couldn't continue that route, so I wanted to find a new passion. And I had already delved into the world of personal training to supplement my meager income as a professional cyclist and also just to kind of maximize my own innate abilities. So I felt that was just the best fit for me, and started going deeper and deeper, and I guess the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about, you know, your athletic career, because obviously you've been an Ironman triathlete and you've had many other accomplishments and they might not know. So let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, great. I became a professional cyclist my senior year in college and ended up over in Europe racing in 95 and then 96 through 98 in Spain as well. Came back to the States in 99 for my wife to get her master's. And then in 99, in one of my first races back here in the States, I had my 3rd concussion, which led to my early retirement from the sport of cycling. And after about a year or so of sitting on the couch and getting fat and, you know, not enjoying my unathletic life, I decided to pursue triathlon. And, of course, I thought Ironman was the way to go. Of course, not knowing anything about how to run or swim. But my wife, luckily, was a swimmer. She taught me how to swim, and I figured I was busy chasing her my early childhood that I figured I could catch just about anybody, so running eventually came to me as well. And of course, I knew how to ride the bike and became a triathlon and did a Ironman my first year, the Great Floridian, and 5th overall there, and then continued doing some of the Ironman qualifiers, finally qualified for Hawaii and became the first leukemia survivor to ever qualify for and compete in the Hawaii Ironman World Championships in 2006. And that was one of my dreams, and I'm glad I finally accomplished it.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's awesome. That's inspiring. And, you know, I mean, there's so many people who are interested in health and nutrition and fitness, and not all of them want to be, you know, an Ironman triathlete like you, and not all of them want to live that kind of extreme athletic lifestyle, but they just want to be healthier in general. So, you know, what are some things that you learned, lessons that you learned becoming, you know, an exceptional world-class athlete that you think can apply to everyone who wants to take their health to the next level?
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, there are 6 foundational principles that I wish I had known early on in my athletic career because I would have only maximized my ability, but now I use them for my own health and, of course, the health of my clientele. And those 6 foundational factors are thinking, breathing, drinking, eating, movement, and sleep. And if you apply these 6 foundational factors in the way in which we were intended and have been on this earth for thousands and thousands of years, then we can do things right and actually have a life of health and happiness. But unfortunately, over the past 100, 150 years, we've really kind of gotten off track. And thus, you know, you find half of us either overweight or obese. Half of us, 1 in 2 of us, getting cancer. We got 4 billion prescriptions written last year in the U.S. alone. And that's enough for like 12 for every man, woman, and child in America. And, of course, you know, stuff like type 2 diabetes has to be renamed, or juvenile diabetes has to be renamed type 2 diabetes because it keeps showing up in all of our children. So obviously we're not doing something right, and a lot of that is just speaks to the foundational factors that I just talked about. We're not thinking right. We're not breathing right. We're not eating, drinking right, movement, or sleeping right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, the statistics are just scary in how far we've come in America and in much of the developed world. We've just become so sick and so overweight and just so out of shape. And, you know, I think it's really interesting you talk about these six foundations, you know, nutrition, hydration, sleep, movement, thinking, and breathing. And, you know, a lot of people don't really talk about all those six areas. Most of we just talk about nutrition and we talk about movement. So why don't you talk a little bit more about some of the things that people might not, you know, hear about all the time, like hydration and sleep and thinking and breathing. What about those that are so important for health?
Well, honestly, you know, everybody's focused on nutrition, but you're drinking water and hopefully copious amounts of water every day, so it's important to magnify by the sheer volume with which it's consumed, as opposed to somebody like eating a steak once a week. You have about a billion biological processes that happen in your body every second, and all of them are pegged to the quantity and quality of water. Thus, if you're walking around dehydrated, you have to ask yourself, which system do I want to shortchange today? Is it your muscular system, your hormonal system, your neuromuscular system? It's hydration is essential for life. So you definitely need to stay on top of that. And one of my rules is a rule that I got from a book called Your Body's Many Cries for Water by Dr. Batman Gilead. And basically he says that to maintain optimal levels of hydration, somebody should drink half their body weight in pounds and ounces of water a day. So a 150-pound person should drink 75 ounces of water a day just to maintain their level of hydration.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And I mean, I've written articles on this as well, and it's like so many people are chronically dehydrated and they don't even know it.
Exactly. I mean, if you're drinking anything other than water, you're actually probably dehydrating yourself, because for a food or a drink, as the case may be, to reach the small intestines from the stomach, it must reach a certain level of concentration. So if you drink something like orange juice, well, before it can go from the stomach to the small intestines, you have to either follow that with water, or the body has to get water from the muscles, the tendons, the ligaments, etc., thus dehydrating you, just to make it reach a certain level of concentration before it can then pass the small intestine and be digested.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So then what's your drink of choice then? Is just water?
Without a doubt, water, and water from a reputable source. And I'm not a believer in bottled water because I think that comes at an economic cost and more importantly, an environmental cost. Of course, I'm sure most of your listeners out there are familiar now with BPAs and phenoestrogens and know that any plastic out there is going to leach this single A into the water, especially as the longer the water has been in that plastic bottle. Well, also, it takes about as much water as you're drinking in a particular bottle to actually make that piece of plastic. And then, of course, every piece of plastic that's ever been made is still on this earth, and only about 10% of the plastic being made at this point is being recycled at all. So there's a huge environmental cost. So my water source of choice is tap water, but with a quality filter.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And what kind of filters do you recommend?
Well, I think there's several out there. The one that I recommend to my clients typically, and I'm not sure if I can give a plug here, but it's Aquasana and healthywater.com. But basically the things that your filter should get rid of are VOCs, which are volatile organic compounds, stuff like synthetic chemicals and medicines that people are ingesting on a daily basis, whether it be Lexapro or, you know, Lipitor or something along those lines, as well as chlorine and fluoride. You know, all filters out there are going to get rid of stuff like lead and arsenic, but those three things I just mentioned are things that you must get rid of, because otherwise you're drinking water that's not going to do you any good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's so important. I mean, we've had a filter on our family's water supply for many years now, and it's just, I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer once you really research what's actually in the water, and
exactly.
You know
that
you got to get that
exactly.
junk out of there so you can have that pure, clean water in your body, because otherwise you're just overloading yourself with all those toxins.
Exactly. And the thing is, a lot of people think about just what they're drinking, but it's also, if it's on your skin, it's in your body. So most of your exposure to these things are going to come from what you're actually showering in, because unless you're taking a cold shower, you can be breathing this in and everything. So you need to have either a whole house filtration system, or what my wife and I did when we first began, we had one on our tap, and then we had one in our shower. And in fact, my clients that shower at my studio, they're showering in clean water because I'm making sure that that water, too, is filtered.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's key. I think those are the two ways to do it for sure.
There's a good saying out there.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Tom, that there's a good saying out there that the best solution for pollution is dilution, and that's all about drinking water.
Absolutely. That's great. You know, and another quote I heard about water filters is, you know, someone took up a glass of water one time, and then one was tap water, one was filtered water, and they put in that chemical that changes the color of the water based on the pH and based on all the nutrients in there. And so they said, they showed up the two glasses of water, the one that's pure and filtered is totally clear, and the other one is just a dirty, mucky, disgusting-looking water. And they said, you know, you can either buy the filter or you can be the filter.
Exactly. Yeah, I like that. In fact, I might steal that if you don't mind.
Absolutely. I think it's a great quote. And it's so true. You know, you can either feed your body what it needs, the pure things it needs, or your body's going to have to filter all that junk out for you, and it's going to drag you down and drag down your energy.
Well, exactly. And along those lines, a lot of people tell me about, well, their main deterrent for buying organic food is the fact that it's so expensive. Well, is it expensive to buy your food or is it expensive to see the doctor? You know, because you're going to either pay for it now or you're going to pay for it later.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth of the matter is, everything you're putting in your body is becoming you. You're replacing 2 million red blood cells every second. You know, your skin every 3 days, your bones every 3 weeks, your entire body every year. And the building block of all the cellular turnover is what you're putting in your mouth in a daily basis. So you better make sure that's quality stuff. Again, another saying is you can't make chicken salad out of chicken crap. And it's the truth. If you're walking around eating fast food and 90% of the money spent on food in this country is spent on fast food, well, guess what? As I tell my clients, you cannot buy health at the drive-thru.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. So let's talk about sleep then. What about sleep? I mean, because obviously sleep is important. Everyone knows sleep is important, but, you know, we don't really talk about it a lot, you know, when we're talking about training or we're talking about making some lifestyle changes.
Right. Well, sleep's all about circadian rhythm. That's a 24-hour cycle, and it's the cycle off which all your other rhythms are built, your weekly, your monthly, your yearly. And so if its foundation is not solid, it's only a question of, you know, how long until you're going to fall off into disease or dysfunction on some level. Everybody is familiar with 8 hours of sleep, but if you're going to bed at 1 o'clock and sleep until 9, that's not necessarily going to be good for you because we've been on this earth for about 2.8 million years, and we've been going to sleep shortly after the sun went down and waking up shortly after it came up. Thus, our bodies are literally programmed such that physical recovery happens from 10 to 2, mental happens from 2 to 6. Thus, if you go to bed at 1, even if you sleep till 9, you're missing 3 hours of physical recovery, and you will not make that up. And that's going to manifest sooner or later as susceptibility to colds or other illnesses, or your allergies start to go haywire, or your knees start to ache because you can't recover from your daily run or even daily life. You know, keep that up long enough, and you get to add that to your sick and tired. It's just not how we're made to live, and it's only because we're, you know, watching TV, where we've got computers now, and everybody's hanging around and seeing how many friends they have on Facebook. We're not honoring our circadian rhythm.
Mm. Absolutely. I think that's really a powerful tip, and that's really true. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just how we evolved. It's, you know, we're animals, and a lot of people, they tend to forget that. They think humans are something different, but, you know, we're just animals like everyone else, and we follow the laws of nature like everything else on this planet. And so it's really important to understand what those laws are.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what about thinking then? I mean, what does thinking have to do with your health?
Well, it all starts with thought. I mean, Tom, say you cut yourself on your arm, and do you sit there and does your brain say, okay, let's send some, you know, platelets to the side and start blocking this off so we can form a scab? No, I mean, your body knows how to heal, but if your thoughts are negative from the get-go, then you're already at a disadvantage. Healing and disease begin in the mind. And a lot of people are walking around with what I call stinking thinking. You have 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts going through your head every day, and research shows that up to 90% of those thoughts are negative. But here's the truth. You cannot have a thought without also affecting your hormonal status. Thus, negative hormones, or negative thoughts, I should say, equal negative hormones, equal negative emotions. So it literally begins with thinking.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I think that's so true. And, you know, when I really started getting into health and nutrition as a teenager, you know, shortly after I started studying, you know, personal development and motivation and listening to people like Jim Rohn and Zig Ziglar and Les Brown, these inspirational speakers, and I noticed really quickly that after listening to them, after changing some of the ways I was thinking, after getting more motivated and having that inspiration, that my health just, it got so much better, so much faster. And, you know, there's no way you can really explain it other than just to feel it, but it's so true that your thoughts create your reality. And, you know, people who play the victim and are always upset and angry and think that someone's out to get them and they blame other people for their health challenges, they never tend to get better. But the people who take responsibility and say, you know, I'm in control of my life and have that positive mindset that they can do whatever they set their minds to, they always get better. No matter what the health challenge is, they can recover because they know they can.
That's right. I mean, there's a book out there by a woman named Candace Pert called Molecules of Emotion. And basically she shows that anytime you're experiencing an emotion or a thought, every cell in your body is sharing that same exact emotion or thought until it actually becomes you. So, yeah, you're wearing your most dominant thought. And, in fact, if you go and look in the mirror now, you're looking at what you were thinking and what you were doing to your body about 6 months ago.
Wow, that's a powerful way to think about it. That's true. Well, are there any other resources you recommend on thinking? Because I think it's such an important topic. So what other, you know, books have you read? What speakers have you listened to? You know, what do you think other people out there should be studying to really get their thinking on a positive, higher level?
Well, Deepak Chopra, obviously. Quantum Healing is a great book. I read it shortly after I was diagnosed with leukemia in 2004. Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now. If people would live more in the present moment and stop living in the past with regret or living in the future with fear, because when you live in the present, neither one of those things can exist, because what is, is. And yet we're always living with what isn't. And that's the only thing that creates regret or fear. And honestly, that's not living. The only time you can really live is right now. So, you know, get out of your head and get into the present moment.
Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, you just said something real quick, and I know you're such a humble guy, but you did have leukemia. So tell us about that, because, you know, there's so many people that maybe they're going through cancer right now. I mean, half Americans get cancer in a lifetime. The other half, you know, die from heart disease. So, you know, the people who are going through those health challenges, what would you say to them to encourage them and to inspire them and let them know that they can recover no matter what the challenge is?
Right. Well, as I said before, everything begins in the head. So put into your mind that you are going to survive. You are a survivor. And then start taking action. As the Quakers say, pray and move your feet. So you can't just sit there and pray that somebody is going to save you. You've got to start doing some of the work for yourself. The universe will meet you halfway. So that means being proactive. Start getting second opinions. Start doing your own research. Start thinking, breathing, eating, drinking, moving, sleeping correctly so that you can give yourself the best chance for survival. And understand, too, that no diagnosis one way or the other is the determinant of what's going to happen. It's not your destiny. You get to basically choose your own destiny. It literally starts in your head.
Mm. That's so true. I love what you just said. Your diagnosis is not your destiny. You are in control of your destiny. And as long as you remember that, it doesn't matter what cancer, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, none of these conditions control you. They're just symptoms in the body. And
exactly.
Your mind, your spirit is so much stronger than that. And you have to just claim
right.
That inner power.
Right. And they can't measure that. In fact, there's another book out there that, you know, I wish I'd written. It's called Anti-Cancer. And I can't remember the author's name right now, but it's quite a good read for anybody going through something along these lines. And one of the things that it talks about most is that the biggest qualification that a survivor has is that they are proactive in their thinking and in their treatment, and they make sure that, you know, they're questioning their doctor. They're not just taking whatever their MD says at face value. They're making sure that the MD can back it up, because especially the generation before you and me, Tom, would oftentimes take whatever the doctor said as gospel. Well, now you and I are going to be the kind of people who question that information and advice. And the honest truth is, doctors have a life expectancy 10 years less than the rest of us. And, you know, unfortunately, they don't know much about health. They do know a lot about disease management. Mm-hmm. So you need to find a person who's healthy to give you health advice. Don't take health advice from somebody who's fat or who smokes or can't walk around the block without getting winded.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, and doctors are really stressed now. I mean, they're so overworked because there's so many sick people out there. And, you know, they focus so much on treatment and not so much on prevention. And they're not taught in medical school anything other than drugs and surgery. They're not taught nutrition. They're not taught alternative health care because there's just not enough time for it. And so they're really focused on one small area of health. And it's really important that you have a wider spectrum. You know, you want a good team. I always talk about having a good team of health professionals with you. And one of them should obviously be a doctor. But if you rely only on that one doctor, you're missing the rest of the parts of the team and the rest of the parts of good health.
That's right. And, in fact, one of the things that I try to do when I'm working with a client is what's called surrounding the dragon. And I'm going to attack it from several different angles, knowing that all those angles are going to work together to give that client a good chance at overcoming that knee injury or getting rid of that high blood pressure or getting rid of depression, if the case may be. You have to surround the dragon, attack it from all different angles, because not one thing works for one person. It's a whole bunch of different aspects that work together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, you've got to do whatever it takes until you get better. And that's the thing, is that people who get better from leukemia like you've done, you know, they have the attitude, I'm going to do this until I get better. I'm going to work until I get better. I'm going to eat healthier until I get better. And there's no question about it. You just make that commitment that no matter what happens, you're going to get better. And you're going to do whatever it takes. If that includes, you know, going to see 20, 30, 50 different health professionals until you get it right, then that's what you're going to do. You don't give up.
That's right. That's right. But along those same lines, I have plenty of people who, with a reoccurring knee injury, you know, or orthopedic insult to their body, they'll do what they need to do to get well, and as soon as they're well, they'll stop doing what they were doing to get them there well. So you got to stay on top of that as well. Maybe not to the same extent, but as they say, you know, dance with the girl you took to the party or whatever the saying is.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you really have to follow through. And, you know, even when you recover from something like cancer, you know, there's always a chance of recurrence. So, you know, cancer survivors as a group, they tend to know that. You know, cancer survivors generally tend to just, they eat healthier, they have that, live a healthier lifestyle. But like you said, a lot of athletes, you know, they'll get better from an injury and then they'll go right back into the old bad habits. So it's really important that you maintain that habit. It's a lifestyle choice that you're making, and you've got to maintain that for the rest of your life.
Exactly, because the only difference between a mistake and a lesson is whether or not you're going to apply the knowledge that you learned. Mm-hmm. You know, because that athlete who goes out and keeps doing what he did to get hurt to begin with, he's just making a mistake. He hasn't learned the lesson. And a lot of people have to learn the lesson over and over again until finally it's fixed for them. And that's why one of my clients who comes to me who is injured or in pain, they usually make good clients because pain's a good motivator. So when somebody is in pain or they're sick, I give them a big congratulations because guess what? They just met their teacher.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And that's my biggest belief is that any symptom or condition that you're facing in your health and your body is just a lesson. Like you said, it's a lesson to learn from. And your body's saying, hey, we got to make some changes here. And if you ignore it, it's just going to get worse. But if you learn from that, your life is going to get so much better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because most of us are not listening to our bodies. And that's a sad, sad state. You know, we're connected with emails and cell phones and Skype and other media, and yet we can't even listen to our own body. Right? There's a problem there.
Mm. Yeah, that's so true. I mean, I think that's one of the most important things, just connect with your own body and understand that all the answers are within. You know, your body is telling you everything you need to know about your health right now. You know, if you're feeling stressed, if you're feeling these negative emotions, if you've got pain in your body, you know, it's telling you, hey, well, let's make some changes.
Right. The body cannot lie. It doesn't have the ability to lie. It's telling you stuff all the time, and just nobody's listening.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about breathing next. You know, that's also something that, you know, not a lot of people talk about outside of maybe yoga. They talk about breathing.
Well, breathing, of course, is essential for life. And, in fact, you can go weeks without food. You can go days without water even. But you're going to only last about a few minutes without proper ventilation. And, unfortunately, most of us are breathing through our mouth, which, of course, is not how we're made to breathe. We're made to breathe through our nose, which you have little turbinates in your nose, which not only warm and filter the air, but it directly stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, which is, to have a quick aside here, you have two parts of your autonomic nervous system, and actually you have three parts if you count the enteric nervous system, which is the one in your gut. But the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system are the two main branches. The sympathetic nervous system is the one that's responsible for fight or flight, and it's catabolic and actually breaks down the body, whereas the parasympathetic nervous system is in charge of digestion and repair. And yet, when one is activated, the other is inhibited. So if you're walking around 24/7 in sympathetic dominant mode and constantly breaking down your body, you'll never be able to repair. And the average person is breathing 25,000 times a day. And yet, if you're breathing wrong, meaning through your mouth as opposed to through your nose, well, then you're going to be sympathetic dominant 24/7, and that's going to inhibit your ability to repair or digest your food even. So that is absolutely essential for health. And, of course, one of the other aspects of breathing is being able to breathe diaphragmatically or through your belly as opposed to your chest. In fact, if you would have your listeners put one hand on their belly and one hand on their chest and take a big breath in through the nose and see which hand moved first, the hand on the belly should rise first and the chest should move last, if at all. That's a diaphragmatic breath, and that's filling the bottom third of the lungs where you have stale, stagnant air if you're a chest breather, and that's where most of us are chest breathers because we're stressed all the time, and that's how you breathe when you're stressed, through your mouth and with your chest.
That's powerful. So, you know, obviously we need to breathe that deep breath, and what I found really helpful is just doing it like when I'm driving, when I'm in a car, just being really conscious that I'm breathing into my nose, breathing in down to the abdomen, making sure the breaths are deep, and then I'm relaxed. You know, how do you apply that, you know, as a trainer?
Well, I come across clients when I'm assessing them that are obvious chest breathers. I have several tests that I run during the assessment that determines that. And if that's the case, if I find somebody along those lines who has what I call an inverted breathing pattern where their abdominals tighten up when they inhale as opposed to your diaphragm should actually, or your navel, I should say, should actually fall away from the spine when you breathe in so that you take a big belly breath. So what I have them do when I first teach them is have them just lie down on their back, one hand on the belly, one hand on the chest, and just do deep breaths into the nose, out through the mouth, trying not to move their chest at all, trying to move just their belly, and they'll automatically and immediately have a sense of release and a sense of relaxation that they haven't had before. And the analogy I like to use is if somebody were to come and try to hit you in the stomach, first thing you would do is tense those abdominals up. Well, if you're walking around with tensed up abdominals, you really can't breathe properly. And the people are doing that all the time because they're stressed and the world is literally weighting them down such that they're expecting that blow to the stomach at any one time. It's a defensive posture. So we need to get that fear out of their heads or at least out of their subconscious. So to get them to breathe correctly will actually help them to get that so-called saber-tooth tiger out of their head because it's really just in their head. It's not following them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I think you're right about stress. And you know the thing about stress is, like you're talking about, is just by breathing you can release a lot of that stress. And a lot of people just think stress is all mental, it's all emotional, it's all in the mind. Well, that's true. It comes from there, but it's also so it comes from the mind and enters the body, but it's also vice versa. It also comes through the body and enters the mind. What I mean by that is, you know, you can approach it of two ways. And I think if you do approach it both ways, you're going to be better. But if you approach it mentally and improving the thinking aspect, you're going to find yourself less stressed. But also if you do the physical activity, the breathing and exercising as well, you're going to get rid of that stress through the body as well.
That's right. In fact, when I'm working with somebody who might suffer from depression, one of the things I'm going to work with them is obviously we're working on the mental aspect of it, but as we work on the physical aspect of it, we start to improve their posture. So a depressed person, if you can picture this in your head, is going to have rounded shoulders and maybe a slumped back posture, and their head's going to be brought forward, and they're going to have a sunken chest, and their abdominals are going to be tight, in that protective fetal position almost. Well, as we start to stand them up straighter and bring the shoulders back and the chest up, well, they automatically look better, and then as they start to look better, you're in a position that is going to be more suited to higher and better disposition so that you're not depressed all the time. It's literally a two-way street. So if you're in a position and a posture of depression, your mind's going to follow. You cannot separate the physical from the mental, from the emotional, from the spiritual. You just can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's all connected. And that's what I love about nutrition and about teaching people how to live a healthy lifestyle is that when you make small changes, like just eating an apple a day, it changes every area of your life because as you start to make the small changes in the body, everything gets better. It's all connected. And so it's kind of like a catalyst. Well, once you start eating an apple a day, you know, you start moving more. Then you start breathing better. Then you start sleeping better. And it's all connected. And so just starting with small changes, I think, can be so powerful. And people often overlook that. They think it's going to be so hard. But you can start small and progress.
Right. That long journey starts with that first step. And an object of motion stays in motion. And in fact, health begets health. I like to use my wife as one of my examples. She's a school social worker, so she goes to a lot of school functions. And she used to eat and drink a lot of the food that was offered there, which was not quality food. In fact, they might have a big bowl of, you know, some red-colored punch. And she would drink that and not think anything of it. Well, now she's become so sensitized to it so that if she ever has a sip of that red punch now, all she can taste is chemicals because she eats and drinks so healthy outside of these functions. So she can actually taste that stuff. Whereas somebody who eats that stuff all the time, you're not going to know any better. So once you start to eat healthy, once you start to move, once you start to breathe, think, drink properly, when you're not doing it right, your body's going to let you know right away.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, it's hardest at the beginning. It's true. Like you said, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step. And when you're changing your lifestyle and your health, it's hard at first, but it gets so easier. And by the time you've done it for a year, 2 years, it just autopilot. You don't even think about it anymore because you're totally changed. All your thoughts are changed. Your body's changed. Your feelings changed. Your breathing's changed. Everything's changed. And it's just a new normal for you. And so there's just that transition period that you've got to get through. And that's why I think it's so important to have a coach during that transition because it just makes it easier.
That's right. And in fact, for some of those people, I get the questions all the time that say, well, you know, how do I start making these changes? Or just give it time and give your taste buds, for example, time to change and taste real food. Because I grew up eating Fruit Loops, you know, and then as I started racing bicycles and thinking, well, I need to start eating more healthy food, I went from Fruit Loops to like Raisin Bran, but with two scoops of sugar. And then it was Raisin Bran with one scoop, and then Raisin Bran with half a scoop, and then just Raisin Bran with no sugar. And to tell you the truth, now I don't eat cereal because it's too sweet for me at this point. My taste buds have changed. And somebody that doesn't believe me, I just say, well, you know, when's the first time you tasted alcohol and did you like it? And they say, no, but you learn to drink and taste alcohol and develop a taste for it. Well, you can develop a taste for eating real quality food, whether it be broccoli or spinach or whatever, because when I first ate broccoli, I didn't particularly like it. Now I love it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's so true. The same thing happened for me when I was a teenager. I started just eating healthier and stopped drinking the pop, and my taste has changed over time. And it's something that's called metabolic reprogramming. It's where your body, once you start getting that good nutrition in your body, it starts to crave more and more of it because it knows that's what's good for it. And so you start to crave the broccoli and the spinach and the cabbage and the veggies and the fruits because your body knows what's what you want. And then after a while, your taste is changing. I mean, I cannot drink soda pop anymore. I drink it and spit it out right away. It's disgusting. I mean, the stuff has like a pH of like 2. It's like battery acid almost.
Exactly. Yeah, and the thing is, too, I think ignorance is bliss. And so the more you know about what some of these things are doing to you in your body, the harder it is to continue to do these things to your body because you know it's just a complete injustice. And if you can give your body what it needs, for example, a lot of people out there eating too many grains. Well, grains have what's called phytic acid. Phytic acid inhibits the absorption of calcium, iron, magnesium, and zinc. Well, zinc is a nutrient that's necessary for you to taste your food. Thus, if you get rid of those grains and that phytic acid stops inhibiting your ability to absorb zinc, well, now you can start tasting the sweetness of your food or the saltiness of your food. And so something that used to taste good to you now tastes too sweet, and you don't want it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And by that point, it becomes easy. I mean, obviously, when your taste changes, it just becomes so easy to maintain that healthy diet.
Right.
So what are some basics for nutrition that you teach people? You know, if someone's just getting started, whether they're an athlete or whether they're just trying to get healthier, what are some basic nutrition principles that you start with and teach everyone?
Well, I like to give them my rules, which I actually took from my mentor, Paul Check. But here are the rules. If God didn't make it, don't eat it. If it hasn't been on this earth for 5,000 years, don't eat it. The more ingredients in the food, the worse it is for you. The longer the shelf life of a food, the worse it is for you. And the more health claims made about a food, the worse it is for you. And an example I like to say here is the woman who came up with the original food pyramid, her name's Louise Light, and in 1991 she brought the food pyramid to the USDA, and yet her base was 6 to 11 servings of fruits and vegetables. And then when it came out, it was 6 to 11 servings of grains, and she's like, what the heck is that? And they said, grain lobby. Anytime you see something that seems contrary to common sense or how we got here, then you have to think, well, who's gaining something here? Usually who's gaining financially? In the case of the grains, it's the grain lobby. In the case of the vegetable oils, it's the vegetable oil lobby. And, you know, aspartame, soy, et cetera. Look at how we've lived for thousands of years. Emulate your ancestors, you know, your grandparents, or at least your great-grandparents, and you can't go wrong. It's common sense, and it's actually quite easy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I love that rule. If God didn't make it, don't eat it. I think that's so true. You know, you've got to just get back to that natural diet, the fruits, the vegetables, the beans, the legumes, the nuts and the seeds, you know, the basics of a healthy diet.
Right.
So what about exercise? I mean, what are the benefits of exercise?
Well, movement is life, and life is movement. So you need to exercise every day. Unfortunately, less than 8% of the U.S. population does any form of exercise whatsoever, and that includes walking the dog. So we need to get moving. And if you're not moving at all, what I would say is just start doing things like park the car farther away from the grocery store and walk to the grocery store. Take the stairs instead of the elevator. And then when you get into a formalized type of exercise, well, do something that you enjoy, because they've done health studies on rats where they put a rat on a treadmill and they let him run and his health markers improve. They put that same rat on a treadmill and force him to run and his health markers go down. So you should do something you enjoy. And admittedly, I may not enjoy some of my harder weight training sessions, but I do enjoy the benefits, for example, of those weight training sessions, and I understand the good it's doing for me, so I can talk myself into doing it, and usually starting the hardest part. If I can get past the first 5 minutes, I'm good. And after 5 minutes, if I don't want to do the exercise, it probably means I don't need to be doing the exercise and I should rest. So that's one thing I would offer your audience. Another thing is the fact that cardiovascular training is way overdone in this society. You need more weight training, less cardiovascular training, partly because cardiovascular training actually stimulates the sympathetic nervous system again, that fight or flight system. And in fact, when you and I were cavemen and women, the only time we went running for 45 minutes, an hour at a time, is when we were running or fighting for our lives. And so it's going to actually stimulate that fight or flight system and break down muscle tissue and trigger cortisol release, which is going to make us older, dumber, fatter, and sicker. And that's why when I'm designing somebody's program, I keep their workout sessions at 45 minutes or less, because intermittent glucocorticoid production is actually good for your immune system, but consistent or chronic glucocorticoid production actually inhibits your immune system. So cardiovascular training is not where it's at.
Yeah, you know, I think that's so true, is because, you know, a lot of people, they just overdo it. They think, well, gosh, if I run for 4 hours, you know, I'm going to be so much healthier, but it's really so much better just to do those 15, 30-minute workouts that you enjoy and do them on a much more regular basis and make that just a part of your lifestyle. You know, like if you're going to take your dogs to the park, you know, play with your dogs in the park, play Frisbee, run with the dogs, but, you know, don't do it for 5 hours and think that, you know, your health is going to turn around just because you, you know, went all out.
Right. And see, you're talking right now to an aerobic animal. I love aerobic conditioning. I was a professional cyclist at one time. I race Ironman triathlons now. So I have to do my cardiovascular training and long hours of cardiovascular training because I want to compete and I want to be efficient. And yet I know it's not good for me, so I'm doing other things such as weight training, which is giving me the anabolic stimulus, as well as thinking, breathing, eating, drinking, and sleeping correctly so that my body is more resilient and can handle the quote-unquote injustice of all that cardiovascular conditioning. And yet, even then, I understand that if your goal is body transformation, cardiovascular training is actually not a good thing for you, because each time you go out and run, you get more efficient at running. You're making yourself into a Honda Civic. You're getting good gas mileage, whereas if you want to get lean, you want to have bad gas mileage. You want to be a sports car. So the analogy I use is look at an Olympic marathon runner and look at an Olympic 100-meter sprinter. They're both very thin, but one is thin and emaciated, the marathon runner, and one is thin, lean, and muscular and looks like the epitome of health, the 100-meter sprinter. And his idea of cardio is about 9.86 seconds, and then you're done. Whereas the marathon runner is going to go run for 2 hours at a time. One is not conducive to health.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And, you know, you see that with so many of these athletes, especially marathon runners, and they don't take care of their nutrition like you do, and they don't pay attention to the sleeping, all these things that go together. And they're just creating so much oxidative stress and so much damage in their body, so much aging in their body, because they're just producing so much free radical, so much damage, damaged proteins and so forth from all that exercise, all that excess burning of fuel.
Exactly. And exercise is a stress. And if you stress a system that's already in the red, you're going to break that system. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
Absolutely. And, you know, you see this all the time with athletes. There's overtraining. You hear about overtraining all the time. Or, you know, you see, professional athletes or college athletes who just drop dead at the age of 30. And you think, wow, they were so healthy. How could they die from a heart attack at the age of 30? The athlete looks so healthy. Well, it's because they're really, really fit. But you can be really, really fit and really, really unhealthy, because it's not the same thing.
Exactly. And in fact, I write about this aspect in my book, and I like to use the analogy of the Tour de France. The Tour de France is a 3-week race where they burn thousands and thousands of calories every day, and they actually lose weight during the course of the event, but they actually gain body fat during the course of the event, because their body is catabolizing any source of protein, muscles, organs, etc., that it can just to survive. And, of course, that makes them sicker towards the end of the race. You know, it's what you have to do to win that race, perhaps, but the person who wins that race is not necessarily the strongest cyclist. It's not necessarily the fastest cyclist, but the cyclist has been able to survive the injustice of all that cardiovascular condition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, the body is a precious thing. You really got to, you know, like it says in the Bible, treat your body like a temple and really take good care of it. It's okay to be a marathon runner. There's nothing wrong with that. Just understand it's hard on the body, and you have to take extra good care of it to protect yourself.
Right. I do a lot of work now with Team and Training to raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and it hurts me to see these people who start exercising to raise money for people like myself and save my life, and yet they're hurting themselves with all this cardiovascular conditioning, and they think, okay, I'm doing this aerobic training, therefore I can now eat junk food or go to McDonald's or drink Coca-Cola, et cetera, because I'm burning all these calories. Well, no, what they've done is they've taken themselves from a pickup truck and made themselves into a sports car. And what kind of fuel do you put in a sports car, regular unleaded or premium unleaded? You actually need to treat yourself better the more you exercise, and yet people are doing the exact opposite.
That's so true. You know, I see that all the time with people. They'll say, oh, I just worked out. You know, let's have a treat. Let's go to McDonald's. And, you know, they're just killing themselves. They just don't understand that, like you said, you've got to treat your body better, especially the more you exercise.
Right.
Yeah. So tell us more about your book. I mean, what's it called? Why'd you write it? And who's it for?
Well, my book's entitled Holistic Strength Training for Triathlon. But don't let the title fool you. I literally could have holistic strength training for cycling, for swimming, for running, and just for life. It's honestly how to lift. There's a lot of information out there, but I could not find anything that was a lot of information that was good and compiled in the same source. So that's what I tried to do, and I think I did a good job. I've had lots of good feedback, including Dave Scott, who emailed me. He's the 6-time winner of the Ironman World Championships. He emailed me and told me I had a solid book. So I was very pleased to hear that. But it's literally for any and everybody, so I don't want people who aren't into triathlon not to pick up the book. And the reason it's holistic is because, yes, I talk about exercise, but I also then talk about how to think, how to breathe, how to sleep, how to drink, etc. So I'm talking about all those six foundational factors and not just movement, because you can be on the best exercise program in the world, but until you get those other factors right, that program's not going to do you any good, and in fact, it could do you harm. That's why my whole final section of the book is devoted to proper nutrition and lifestyle.
Absolutely.
And I wrote it specifically because the team and training people that are raising money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, I felt that they needed a Bible to refer to, and so proceeds from the book actually go to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and I felt that was part of my way to be able to kind of give back, because they raised money for a drug that has saved my life and saved the lives of countless of other, you know, leukemia survivors, and I thought it was one of my best ways that I could offer some type of advice to people and give back.
That's awesome. You know, thank you for doing that. And it's just, you know, it's just so cool to see people like you who've overcome such struggles in your life and, you know, have become so successful in your field and just give back and help others and serve other people. And, you know, it's really just great to see that.
Well, I appreciate that, Tom. And I've gotten to the point now with a lot of my readings and knowledge that, you know, there's no difference between Andrew and Tom. We're the same people. The only thing that differentiates us is the thing that we call the ego, and yet you're nothing but a bunch of atoms, and I'm nothing but a bunch of atoms, and the truth is, atoms are nothing but 99.9% emptiness. So there really is no difference between you and me, so I should be treating you like I want to treat myself, and I should be treating everybody in the entire world how I want to treat myself, and that's what I've been living my life like. When I wake up in the morning, I tell myself, I choose to be happy, I choose to be healthy, I choose to make this life a better place. And that's the thing that sets the tone for my day. It literally gets me up and motivates me to continue doing what I'm doing. It's become a passion for me.
That's beautiful, you know, and I think that's so true. And, you know, when I look at really the people who I've met in my life who are the most healthy and just vibrate energy and enthusiasm and just the epitome of perfect health, you know, they all have that one common thing, and that's attitude. They have that attitude, like you just shared, that they want to help other people, that it's not about themselves. It's about how can they make a difference in the world and help other people. And, you know, you can't learn that in a book. You know, you just have to learn that from life experience and from being around the right people and, you know, shifting your mindset. But it's, you know, when you have that mindset, you know, opportunities come to you. And if you do get sick, you'll find someone like Andrew who will come by and say, hey, you know, take a look at what I can teach you about nutrition. And though all those things will open up when you have that attitude, and I think that's just the universal thing that I've noticed with all really healthy people is they have that same attitude.
Right. You know, like attracts like. You know, all of these thoughts are out there. You just have to open yourself up to the correct one. And it's not hard. You surround yourself with good people and good things and good thoughts, and that's exactly what you're going to get from life.
Absolutely. I totally believe that. So let's talk about this documentary that you're in, Living is Winning. It sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, actually, these guys approached me and wanted to do a documentary based off my life and my overcoming cancer and getting to the Hawaii Ironman World Championships. So I told them, sure, you know, no big deal, follow me around. I obviously did not know what that would entail, but it was a lot more consuming for about a year and a half of filming. So something that they said, okay, this will only take about an hour, would take 3 hours, and I would do an exercise, and they'd say, hey, that was cool, let's see that exercise be, you know, done again, et cetera. But honestly, in the end, I knew it was going to be a good thing because I knew it would motivate people who were in my same shoes and might think that they've been diagnosed and life is over for them and they need to just give up. Well, I knew that by doing this, this would help open a lot of people's eyes and get them to be motivated and, again, take responsibility for themselves, which is the true definition of health.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think it's a great film, and it actually won, it's won several awards, including Best Film at the Atlanta Film Festival. But it's, you know, it's just my story, so for me, I just consider it, hey, it's normal, it's just my life. And yet, there's been a lot of positive feedback. So anybody who's interested, anybody who's fighting leukemia or maybe even just wanting to do an Ironman, I think they might be very interested in seeing this movie, Living is Winning.
Awesome. And where can we get our hands on it?
There's a website called livingiswinning.com, and you can order something straight from there. Don't quote me on this, but I think they cost about $25. And I'm actually friends with the producer. His name's Jeff Keating, and he has a company named Doghouse Pictures. But go to the website, check it out, and then email me at andrew@triumphtraining.com and let me know what you think. I don't make a dime off of it. And, in fact, I don't think the producers yet make a dime off of it either. They're still trying to pay back their investors. But I think it might be worth the investment.
Definitely. And so tell us a little bit more about your company and when you, kind of what you do on a day-to-day basis and, you know, where people can learn more about you and get in touch with you.
Well, I have a website, of course, triumphtraining.com, where I actually do a lot of blogging. In fact, a lot of my blogging has been turned into an app called, Daily Tips for Holistic Health for iPhone. And I've been getting a lot of feedback from that because one of the tabs on that app is an Ask Andrew tab. So I've gotten questions from Australia or from England or from Canada and, of course, all over the United States with questions regarding health. So they're directly corresponding with me, and I'm writing them back and giving them answers to various health questions. But my website, I think, is a virtual potpourri of information that is absolutely free and great information, and I strongly urge people to go check it out. My business, Triumph Training, has been open since about 2001, and about 2.5 years ago, I opened up my own studio here in Atlanta where I work one-on-one with clientele, and it's just a beautiful setting, and I was incredibly happy doing what I do for a living. I mean, it's absolutely my passion, but when I opened up my studio, my happiness quotient went up several notches, because now when I leave the house to go to work in the morning, it's not like I'm even going to work. I'm going to my second home, and I'm getting to hang out with my friends, and I'm getting them to meet and surpass certain goals that, you know, they never even thought they could achieve. It's absolutely wonderful, and I'm blessed to be able to do that on a daily basis.
That's awesome. That's beautiful, and it's great to be around people like you that love what you do and have so much knowledge and can really just help so many people out there. So I just really want to thank you, Andrew, for being with us today on the show, and thank you for all the incredible knowledge you share with us.
Well, Tom, it's been my pleasure, and I wish your audience out there the best of luck in their health and happiness, because it's out there for them. All they have to do is go out there and take it.
Hey there, it's Tom Corson-Knowles again. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. I hope you found that incredibly valuable. Hey, if you liked the show today, please subscribe to us on iTunes, The Authentic Health Coaching Show, and come join our community at AuthenticHealthCoach.com. Wishing you an amazing day.